Hey everyone, and welcome to the Clear Cache podcast, the sneaky, stealthy, under the sheets, in a box, in the closet, be very, very quiet. This is the stealth episode. You gotta be quiet, okay?
Watch out. Watch out. Guard's coming.
What was that? Oh, guess it was nothing.
That's gotta be one of the most common guard sayings, right?
That is the most common guard saying.
Guess it was nothing?
Absolutely. Guess it was nothing, yeah.
I've heard that in many a stealth game.
Both Wolfenstein games. Just revisited MGS5. It's in there. Deus Ex.
You can confirm it's in all these games?
Thief.
Thief.
Just throw a Cockney accent on it.
Oi!
In the Thief series.
Oi. That's my Cockney. I can only say oi.
Oi! Guess it was nothing.
Oi! Guess it was nothing. Dishonored, by the way, they had a lot of Cockney stuff in there and a stealth game, and they were constantly guessing where the sounds were coming from.
They were very curious people.
So hey everyone, this is the Clear Cache podcast. I'm your host Julian. As always, I'm here with Nick.
Hello.
He had to take a breath because he's going into stealth mode.
I'm playing Tenchu and I'm hopping under the water beneath the bridge. I've got my bamboo straw up.
Was that... I don't remember Tenchu at all. Was that... Which one was that one?
That Tenchu Stealth Assassin was a ninja stealth series on the PlayStation.
Okay. See, I kind of missed the like PlayStation as a whole. I got it late. I always get the Sony stuff late.
Yeah.
So I think I miss a lot of the core like Sony games. You know, because I always get the systems like a couple years after they're out. So mm-hmm. I miss those first two solid years of like, non-multi-platform games that come out.
I just always get the wrong system, like the objectively wrong system. I got the Genesis instead of the Super Nintendo. I got the N64 instead of the PlayStation. I got the GameCube instead of the Xbox or PlayStation 2. I got a Wii. I never got an Xbox 360. I got a PlayStation 3 eventually. Still never had an Xbox 360. And then I got an Xbox One instead of a PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
And I missed out on everything.
Where does the Dreamcast fit into that?
Oh, I got the Dreamcast. Well, the Dreamcast was its own. There was no other 128-bit system.
I guess
it
so.
Was its own
but that was kind of out like when you had to make a decision between like what, N64 and PlayStation?
No, I had a 64 already, and the PlayStation was pretty old at that point.
That's true.
But I got the Dreamcast for my birthday in 99.
Dude. Hey, yeah. Go back and listen to that Dreamcast episode if you guys haven't heard it. Cause
we could just do it again.
I would just do it again. Fuck stealth shit. I don't like stealth stuff. I'm back on my Dreamcast current.
You don't like stealth stuff, though. Isn't that true?
Yeah. I mean, see, like, the problem with stealth games that I've always had is that I have a low tolerance for frustration in gaming. That's why it took me so long to get into the Dark Souls series. It's because I'd play an hour and then just get completely wrecked by something over and over again, you know, and then lose all my souls, and then as with my souls, my patience was also lost.
But you beat several Dark Souls games.
No, so, well, yes, I only, Dark Souls 3 was a turning point for me.
Okay.
Because I bought it knowing that there could be the possibility that it was just going to be the same routine I had experienced with Demon Souls. I played Dark Souls 2. I was going to pick it up, play an hour, get to a boss that I couldn't beat, and then that was it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But surprisingly, I stuck through it, and Dark Souls 3 was, as I said, a turning point. I was able to play that game all the way through and then play through it multiple times. I really liked that game. And when it comes to stealth games, I don't know if I've had like a turning point like that, you know, in a specific stealth game where it's centered around stealth, where it's not just a side mechanic.
I think that's a good comparison point, the difficulty of Dark Souls games versus the difficulty of stealth games. In a Dark Souls game, if you fail, you've still technically made progress, so long as you catch up to where you died and retrieve your things, right? So you have some semblance of progress in fail states. Whereas like in a traditional stealth game, if you progress through a level stealthily and then you are spotted, you lose your stealth state. And then if you're playing, you know, traditionally, you're going to restart and try it over again. And you've made no progress in restarting. So it's understandable that you would become exhausted by that experience.
Yeah.
And not by the Dark Souls experience.
Yeah, exactly. I think that history with stealth games, for me, can be summed up as exactly that. There's just many times when I've lost the patience. And I wasn't feeling rewarded for playing, you know, because I would get 25 minutes of progress and then be spotted by someone and feel like I had to reset or restart or was forced to reset or restart in some cases, right? Mm-hmm. And stealth as a whole, as a mechanic in a video game, is very open right now and has been for years, where it could either be just a mechanic, it could be the focal point of the game, and we'll go into how each of that, how that is separated. But I want to ask you, first off, do you remember the first stealth game that you played?
It's funny you ask that, because that's what I was going to ask you.
Ooh.
Yeah, but I'll answer first.
Okay.
The first stealth game that I remember playing, probably played some rudimentary stealth game prior to this, but the first one that I remember playing is Thief, okay. The Dark Project on PC. And that is a fortunate choice, because Thief to this day is still one of the more advanced stealth games like ever made.
Right.
Have you ever played a Thief game?
I tried the one that came out on that was a launch game with the Xbox One, or I don't know if okay. It was a launch game, but came out shortly thereafter.
Before.
Right. And yeah. They had a demo for it. I played the demo, knowing that it was a stealth game, obviously. But I guess the short answer is no. I played a little bit of a Thief game, but not enough to form an opinion.
Okay. So Thief, and as far as I'm concerned, like modern so-called immersive sim games, are the result of a single studio branching out and developing similar games. So Thief was made by Looking Glass Studios, who's also responsible for the System Shock games. And developers from Looking Glass Studios went on to develop the Deus Ex games as well, which are also which also have pretty good stealth mechanics. Thief in particular is strictly a stealth game. There's no fail state for being spotted, technically. But you're an underpowered thief who is tasked with entering an open level and stealing something in particular. And you're trying to evade the guards, and you get more money if you're not spotted or if you don't have to kill any guards and stuff like that.
So is Thief kind of like a precursor to the same formula that makes a Dishonored game that we see today?
Absolutely. And Dishonored is a direct descendant of Thief, in that Harvey Smith, who is the designer of Dishonored, or if not the designer, he's a higher up in the development of Dishonored, was I believe a Looking Glass Studios staff member. So he's responsible, or he was not responsible technically, but he was involved in the development of at least Deus Ex, if right. not Thief as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you go online and just look at footage of the early Thief games and compare it to footage of the new Dishonored game, Dishonored 2, very, very similar in terms of, like, I remember seeing a video of someone playing Thief, like a speed run, and there was moments where what do you remember the thief's name? He's got a
Garrett.
Garrett, right?
Yeah.
Where Garrett is up in the rafters looking down, and there's the guards walking around and stuff. And I was just like, "Oh, this is Dishonored, basically."
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is an iteration. Dishonored is an iteration of a concept developed in the '90s by some forward-thinking developers who have iterated on that concept at their own studios ever since. You've got Thief, you got Deus Ex, you got System Shock, you got BioShock. You've got Dishonored, and then you've got Prey as well from the same studio, Arkane Studios.
Would you consider BioShock a stealth game?
No, but it has its roots in System Shock, sure. which has more stealth in it than BioShock.
I see. So they're all kind of the same ilk, and
yeah,
it's all and big, incestuous.
It's kind of like if you would think about it as an art collective, mm-hmm. and all of these artists in the collective all have the same, goal that they're trying to work towards. They're just doing it in their own ways.
Right. That's a good point. So the first stealth game that I remembered playing was as a kid on my dad's PC. We had Abe's Odyssey, the Oddworld series. Right. And that was a 2D side-scrolling platformer that emphasized remaining hidden from your enemies, as any stealth game does. So there was a lot of hiding in shadows and waiting for the alien guards to pass, a lot of puzzle solving, and a pretty high difficulty curve, especially for me as a kid.
That's a hard fucking game.
It's super hard. And the controls are kind of wonky. It has that kind of like claymation design to it, where the characters kind of look like they're stop motion. So they move kind of like they're stop motion. And there's a lot of tricky jumps you have to pull off. And that was my first experience with stealth. And although I loved to play that game because I loved the way that Abe talked, he had that weird raspy alien voice. I was very immersed in that game world. I thought it was so interesting as a kid, but I was never able to get very far in it, or probably enjoy it to its full extent, because I couldn't get past like maybe the first 2 hours of the game. Is this too hard for my little kid brain? Mm-hmm. And I remember my dad like trying to be a dad and like impress us and be like, yeah, look how far I can get, and then just getting crushed by boulders and shit, and like getting frustrated himself and like wanting to smash the keyboard. It was great. But that just goes to show you how frustrating stealth stuff can be, especially when you are trying your hardest to remain stealthy and complete objectives that way.
What was a fail state in Abe's Odyssey? That's the game, right? Abe's Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What would happen if you got spotted?
It would almost go into like a cutscene where you just were 100% going to die. Like if you were walking along a platform or hanging down from something and an enemy spotted you, there was no way you were going to be able to get away. You still had control over your character, but the way that the enemy got to you so quickly and then killed you, it almost became a cutscene. So being seen in that game was instant death, pretty much. Yeah. And it would just send you right back to the checkpoint, usually when you entered that room where you got killed in.
Right. Yeah, so I agree, like that kind of stealth is like binary on off, like a win lose state stealth. It doesn't work for me either. I'm a big stealth fan, but there are limits to my patience as well. And a lot of stealth can be learning the level and going back and trying again over and over again until you've mastered the level.
Yeah, it's like that repetition in Super Meat Boy, a game like that, where it's like you just die and fail so often that it becomes it's just a super quick cycle.
Yeah. So if a game is too simple, and if a stealth game is too simple, and it's simply a matter of like weaving through properly without being spotted in the specific time frames that the enemy is, going to see you in that area, that's not enough for me to enjoy the game. But there are games where I do play them like over and over again, trying to master the level, but those games have more going on, and I feel like I'm developing my own pattern that I'm going to execute perfectly, not just the game's levels pattern that I need to execute perfectly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it.
So like an example of a game that I find a pattern in and then I repeat ad infinitum until I'm like throwing my controller is Hitman.
Yes.
You've got a task somewhere in the level and you can get there any way that you want, and there's probably an optimal route, but finding your own route and deciding on the thing that you want to do and then executing that perfectly, that's enough to motivate me to keep trying.
Yes. And Hitman is a good example of a game that I can play and experience the moderate level of frustration, but feel rewarded when I am able to pull off something like I've been wanting to do, you know? Mm-hmm. I've been playing the new Hitman game on and off. I haven't completed all of the stages, and there's not many. I think there's only like 7. But I've invested a lot of time into that because I just keep replaying the same stages over and over and over again, trying to do the assassinations in all of the ways that you can, or the ways that they tell you you can. There's hidden ways to do it also, but the new Hitman game is so, so good at allowing you to exist in what is primarily a stealth game, but explicitly tells you the options available to you and lays it out in a very accessible way, something that the Hitman games before didn't necessarily do to the full extent. A lot of the Hitman games before were just here are 3 targets, kill them, or do these few objectives. And then there was things you could find in the stages that would help you assassinate them. But Hitman, the new Hitman game, which it's just called Hitman, right?
Yes.
They lay everything out. They tell you exactly what type of assassinations you could do. It's really, really great. And it's, like, free, too. You have to pay for the extra levels, but you can download it for free.
I didn't know that. I know that the first level is free now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man, the Hitman games are good, and they're good at incentivizing continuing to attempt something, which early stealth games had a hard time with, which some stealth games still have a hard time with. Mm-hmm. And I think the binary requirement that you complete a level stealthily or you lose, I think that should die and okay. should cease to exist.
Right.
And the fluidity of stealth mechanics should improve so as to allow you to continue even if you are spotted.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not work too hard to punish you for being spotted, because there are games that allow you to be spotted and keep playing. There are lots of those games. But if there's a stealth mechanic and you're not using it properly, you're punished. Like, you don't get as many points, or you don't get the good ending, or you're shot to death because it's extremely hard. You know, they want you to play them stealthily, but they also offer the opportunity for you to not. It's just there's no incentive to not play them stealthily.
Sure. Yeah, there are examples like that. I think Dishonored is separate from that, because I've played Dishonored all the way through without being seen or without killing anyone. Mm-hmm. And then I've also played it. They have it's called High Chaos and Low Chaos, right? I think we actually talked about that before. But you could play all the way through as violent as possible, killing everyone, not caring if you're seen. And at the end, you just have a different ending, or, you know, different rating, basically.
Well, I think that's a problem too, because there are morality. There's a morality system in Dishonored, and like most people are going to try to get the good ending by way of achieving like good morality through their playthrough, and that's going to necessitate that they don't engage in the violent mechanics. So there's like, and you're also like punished for engaging in the violent mechanic. Like, the levels become more difficult because of the high chaos rating. There are more zombies around. There are more guards around, that kind of shit. So, like, it's actively punishing you for playing violently.
That's true. And
that's frustrating. Like, I want to engage with Dishonored's combat mechanics because they're relatively good, but I'm not incentivized to. I'm incentivized to play stealthfully. And, like, I like that, but don't make, like, I'm going to choose the bad way on purpose, because you're not giving me any reward for doing that. You're also going to give me a bad ending on top of it. Like, great.
Mm-hmm.
However, play the Knife of Dunwall DLC like violently, because that character is an asshole.
Right. So you had to fit into the character.
It felt good, and like that, you know, like there was a chaos rating that punished me for playing violently, but it also felt like narratively consistent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. These are things that people think about, and it's,
absolutely
does a disservice to players to just say like, well, if you want to play violently, go ahead, and ignore the fact that they're going to have some cognitive dissonance or like a bad ending or whatever the fuck.
Right. And I think this is it, that thought is similar to how I play like a Fallout game or a Skyrim game.
Mm-hmm.
Not Skyrim, Elder Scrolls. Skyrim is included in that. But both of those games include stealth mechanics. I think it's called Sneak in Elder Scrolls, right? And then it's just called Stealth in the Fallout games.
And just says stealth mode on the screen, right?
Or something, or sneaking, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not, it's just a side mechanic. And you have the option in those games, because they're RPGs, to build your character through leveling up towards being a more stealthy character.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I played most of my playthroughs of Skyrim and even Oblivion before that, was a stealthy character who would sneak through a cave or an enemy hideout or something and just use bow and arrow and snipe people.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always played those games like that. And what made that, as and with Dishonored, more accessible to me was the fact that there was immediate save states, and you could save right before you walk into the next room.
Yeah.
And if you walk in and someone sees you, you just immediately load. So
I love that you're giving that as like an endorsement
of the game design. I know. I am. I have to, because it made it more fun for me.
Yeah.
Because as I said at the top of this, I my patience for stealth games is limited.
No, look, man, like save scumming is like intrinsic to playing PC games. That's you mash that F9 key or F7 or whatever the fuck you set it to. You mash the quick save button all the way through, dude. Like, that's how I played Deus Ex.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I played all of its successors. That's how millions of PC gamers worldwide have played these games.
Right.
But like, that's not, I think that there's something to say about games that make you feel in the back of your brain, I've got to set this up because I'm going to fail. And the fact that you're not necessarily failing when you get spotted, but you treat it as a failure, that I think that says something about the game's design. And there are games where I don't feel that way about being spotted. I'm okay with moving forward. And I don't feel like I have to go back and try again.
Right.
And I think that that is important in advancing stealth games. Because that's just not how stealth works in the real world. Like, you can contain being spotted. You know, it doesn't automatically become a 4-alarm fire if somebody sees you.
Yeah. Most stealth games, for me, experience-wise, haven't felt that way, though. It's almost been, which is why I've relied on the save state, because I felt like if you get spotted, there's very, especially in a game like, I mean, Dishonored, there's more leeway. You have the ability to quickly warp to your target and take them out before they alert the other guards, but it's a very small window. But mm-hmm. in a game, like as I gave an example, Skyrim, you get spotted and that's it. Everyone is alerted.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do at that point to calm it down. And so it does feel like a failure. If you wanted to sneak through a dungeon and kill everyone without being seen, and one person sees you, the whole dungeon is alert.
So a game that I think moves, or I think made a big move for the stealth genre as a whole, game design as a whole, is Splinter Cell Conviction, which I didn't like previous Splinter Cell games because they controlled so heavily and methodically. I appreciate the detail of their designs, but I just didn't like the way they played, basically. Conviction takes that depth of control and says, what if you're a hunter and all of the enemies are your prey? And you're using your skill to evade detection while simultaneously taking them all out. And they all know you're doing it. And it's still stealth because they don't know where you are. That's compelling to me, because you can play that game without getting spotted and do great. You know, it's still a stealth game. or you can get spotted and they all know you're there and you can still devastate them without them seeing you ever again.
Right.
And they're in an alert state.
It's the Batman complex.
Yeah,
They Batman know he's evolved. In the room, yeah. But he's going to fucking grapple down. He's going to pick you up. He's going to drop you hanging from a gargoyle. That's how it works.
Batman is a simpler experience of that game design. But you're in control. And typically when you're playing a stealth game, you're in control when you're not seen. And then you get spotted and you lose control. And you have to hide or flee or get out of there, basically, because they become in control, right? But yeah, you're being in control of the alert state. That's super cool and interesting, and
right.
You feel really powerful playing that game too.
Yeah, you feel more than human. And Sam Fisher, probably a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Splinter Cell guy. Yeah, he's the Splinter Cell guy, right? Sam mm-hmm. Fisher. Yeah.
Yeah.
He is kind of a superhero. He does some super. What was Splinter Cell Conviction? The one where if you got spotted, it went into slow motion, and you could.
I think so.
You could do headshots. It was kind of like
yes,
Metal Gear Solid 5, which has that where it slows down time if you get spotted and you have like
that's right.
a few seconds or a second or something to quickly take out the enemy or throw something at his face or something and knock him out.
No, that's correct. You also were able to set up headshots just on your own without right. having to get spotted.
Right.
But another thing that it did was the last known position mechanic,
yes.
which I think other games have since replicated.
Yes.
That's fucking rad. And like, that's the way things work, you know, and like in reality.
Leaves your little ghost behind.
Manipulate their knowledge of where they think you are to remain in control of that alert state. That's fucking cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sort of evolution that I want to see in stealth.
Right. Take out the save states, bring back the last known location ghosts.
Yeah. And like, you play Dishonored, and you can be in control of being spotted, but you still end up with, like, enemy spotted 6. Like, you still end up with a scorecard of effectively your failures at the end. And to remove those scores from, like, your performance, I think incentivizes playing more recklessly and more creatively in those games. Like, in there was a... DLC for Dishonored 2 called Death of the Outsider, where there is no chaos meter any longer, and that sounds right up my alley, because you can just play however the fuck you want and
right.
make narrative decisions however you want without worrying like, am I gonna get punished for this?
We should play that game soon. I want to play Death of the Outsider badly,
dude. I still have to beat Dishonored 2. That game is really good though.
Yeah, I haven't beat it yet. I could talk I think we did talk about Dishonored 2 somewhat on something. But
we did, yeah.
That Clockwork Mansion was fucking dope.
It's a good ass level.
Oh yeah. So when we were speaking on this episode and trying and formulating ideas for it, there are two games in particular that Nick here has had a long relationship with and has a lot of stuff to say. I think we're gonna cover a little bit of Metal Gear Solid now. And maybe save more Metal Gear Solid stuff for the future, and then Deus Ex probably needs its own thing, and we're probably gonna do something with the new game Human Revolution, so that'll be on the YouTube channel. But
make me swoon thinking about Deus Ex, man.
Ah, God, I wish I felt the way about it that you do.
Ooh.
Because
I love it.
I want to love it so bad because there's so much I like about it, but I don't have enough experience playing the game so far.
All right.
But we'll get into that. You already mentioned Deus Ex a little bit here. People know that it's like, you know, incorporates a lot of stealth into the game. It's a it's a major mechanic there. But we need to talk a little bit about what is arguably the best stealth game.
My opinion.
Your opinion.
Yeah.
And one that I don't have a lot of experience with, and you have all the experience with.
That's Metal Gear Solid. Frustrating, man. Metal Gear Solid 5 is mechanically the best stealth game ever made. It's mechanically, in my opinion, the best action game ever made. It's just, it controls flawlessly, and you have such diversity of options available to you at all times. It's perfect. It's fucking perfect. And here's a quick aside. Make PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds in the Fox Engine. Whoever owns that, Konami, I know you're not making games anymore.
Link up.
License that to PlayerUnknown. Let them make a game in a good fucking engine for a change. Because PlayerUnknown plays like shit.
Wait, so does Konami own the Fox Engine?
Yeah, dude. Fucking, they kept the Fox Engine.
No. Because stealth it up and steal it back.
Well, they're making Metal Gear Survive on the Fox Engine, but it's some other studio, not Kojima.
Is it going to be a Battle Royale type game?
No. I'm just saying that a game is being made in the Fox Engine.
Okay.
It's technically a Metal Gear game. But
is this those? Yeah. It's like zombies or something, right?
It's fucking zombie.
Great.
Anyway, Metal Gear Solid 5. Mechanically perfect game.
Well, have you played the Metal Gear Solid franchise since the beginning?
Yeah. Since the PlayStation era beginning, I played Metal Gear Solid on my Dreamcast by way of Bleemcast, RIP Bleem. Bleem was a developer of emulation software that allowed you to play very specific PlayStation games on your Dreamcast and would up-res them.
Right.
It was fucking tight, dude.
That's
it looked
sweet.
Amazing.
I don't know if we talked. I mean, I think we might have covered that a bit on the Dreamcast episode, but.
Oh, I don't know.
I didn't know you played Metal Gear on it. That's awesome.
Yeah. That was the only Bleemcast game I played. There were only three anyway.
Oh, shit.
It was like Tekken 3, Gran Turismo 2, and Metal Gear Solid.
Nice.
But yeah, I played Metal Gear Solid on my Dreamcast. I wanted to play that game so bad since it came out. I wanted to play it so bad. And then I never had a PlayStation, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So I played it a couple of years after it came out. But it was still revelatory. That game, that series is a series is sorry, I messed it up the first time. Attention to detail is phenomenal and draws me in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what draws me to it myself is that I've always been really into Japanese import stuff, and it's very, very like obviously developed by a Japanese company. You know, I mean, there's some Japanese games that become westernized and it loses that touch,
mm-hmm.
but there's so much about it that just feels like you're watching an anime.
Yeah.
Especially the characters themselves. You know, they're all set in a Western world too. I mean, like Snake is a white dude.
It is the weirdest. It has the weirdest, like, lineage. It's the product of a Japanese auteur who is obsessed with Western military industrial complexes, and developed a game that is ostensibly the start of a series, while simultaneously being buried in the lore of his previous games from, we're looking at like three generations ago, that people probably never fucking played, one of which never even came to the US. And particular story beats directly reference both those games and things that haven't yet come out in future Metal Gear Solid games.
Or probably maybe not even ever come out now. What do you think?
What do you mean?
Well, you said that it references stuff that is in future Metal Gear Solid games.
Oh no, I mean like it references stuff that is clarified in Metal Gear Solid 2.
I see. So it's so there's games like 2 will reference something that happens in 3 or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and like 1 references stuff that happens in 3.
Got
it. And like there's so much like stuff that just doesn't make any fucking sense if you're playing it the first time around when it first came out. That it's a wonder that it was a success, because like it's impossible to penetrate. And then you get to like 3 generations later, or sorry, a generation later, 10 years later, and Metal Gear Solid 3's around, and it's talking about what happened in Metal Gear Solid 1, and you're like, did he have this planned? There's no way. It's just weird. It's a fucking weird game, and it's so entrenched in itself that I couldn't understand why it would be daunting to enter that series.
Yeah, it's one of the, it's definitely a series where almost no matter where you enter, you kind of feel like you're already behind four episodes, you know?
That's correct, yeah.
It's like if you started Stranger Things halfway through the season.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of vibe.
And like with every... So Metal Gear Solid 1 necessitates previous... Not necessitates, but it relies on previous knowledge of previous Metal Gear Solid games. Or Metal Gear games, sorry. And then future Metal Gear games expound on what happens in Metal Gear Solid. So you're still in the dark playing that game. Metal Gear Solid 2... throws you for a fucking loop immediately by you're not even playing a Snake. And then Metal Gear Solid 3 is the only game in the whole series really that you can enter totally fresh.
Because that's kind of like, is that the first entry in the canon?
It's not still. It's still not. It's far, to my knowledge, it still is the successor to the MGX game. And the NES game.
See, I always thought that
I don't know.
I always thought that those games, like, I know that there was one that came out on NES or whatever, but I always thought that those were standalone. I didn't think they actually had story that carried over into the...
No, and I'm wrong anyway, because what happens in Metal Gear Solid 3 actually predates... I'm not certain of this, but it actually predates at least one of the earlier, like, NES MGX games.
Okay, I see.
Because one of the bosses, I think his big boss, it happens on like Outer Heaven or whatever the fuck.
God,
I don't know. It's so confusing, dude. There's no, it's crazy. And then like, then there's Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, which is a PSP game that fucking like nobody played relative to other Metal Gear Solid games. And then Metal Gear Solid 5 is a sequel to Peace Walker.
That's right.
You can guarantee nobody has played that game. Right.
Well, wait, wasn't there one that came out recently that or was it Metal Gear 5 that included Peace Walker? Like, it included that as a...
No, it was the Metal Gear Solid Collection.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Which was 2, 3, and Peace Walker on PS2 and Xbox.
That's right. That's right.
And that's a good game. That's a really good game. Don't get me wrong.
Peace Walker?
Yeah, it's a fucking great game. And the story in that game is awesome.
And that kind of included some of the early functionality of Metal Gear 5 with, like, capturing people and making them your... That's kind of where it originated, right?
Yeah, the Fulton thing. Yeah, that first happened in Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker.
Right.
It was all to say nothing of 4, which necessitates that you've played the previous 3 games.
Right.
Not a lot of games really, like, require that you play... their successors for you to understand them at all.
No, five not is the many.
Most egregious.
Yeah. Like that, I felt that immediately because I did try to play Metal Gear 5 last year and I still want to revisit it. And you know, even more than you, because I take your advice and I listen to what you say and I take your recommendations and I know that usually when you recommend something to me, it's going to be good. And even after that, what really drove me to like want to go back and play Metal Gear 5 and know that it would be something that I really like if I give it a chance was that my brother, who does not play games very often, is more concerned with pretty much everything else than video games. I mean, he does occasionally get into it. He got Metal Gear 5 and just was he had to put me aside and say, dude, this fucking game is so good. And when he did that, you know, I was like, okay, I'm missing out on something here.
Yeah, man. The thing about Metal Gear games is that sometimes I enter them only wanting the story. The gameplay comes second, and the story comes first. The detail of the game's design comes second, and then the gameplay comes last. Like, it's just a vehicle for the rest of that stuff. That's generally true of every Metal Gear game that I've ever played. The gameplay is not fluid. It's difficult to manage. Sometimes it's Metal Gear Solid 3 in particular. It's extremely complex and you never really fully get the hang of it. Metal Gear Solid 5, the gameplay trounces everything else by a huge margin. And in fact, the story is one of the weakest parts of the game, which is a bummer. So it's a real like weird like odd man out in the Metal Gear Solid series in that way. which is further incentive for me to recommend it to you. Right. Because although it technically necessitates that you've played or at least know the story of Peace Walker of all fucking Metal Gear Solid games, you can play that game without knowing the story and appreciate it because the gameplay is so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was Metal Gear 5 a departure in terms of gameplay? Because I feel like that there's a lot of stuff that was included in this that feels like a fresh take on the series, and especially when I saw early footage of it before it was released of, like, Snake doing the rocket punch. That, I mean, that's pretty wacky stuff. I feel like there was no rocket punches in any Metal Gear before.
Well, you're sort of wrong. Like, Metal Gear games have always had some, like, standout, this is unbelievably goofy bullshit in them. Mm-hmm. Like, Metal Gear Solid 1, you can earn a tuxedo to play the whole game through, for, I think, just for beating it. Or, like, you can spy on somebody while they're doing push-ups, and if you keep coming back, they'll be in their underwear and, like, all kinds of, like, dumb, goofy shit. Mm-hmm. Like that. There's a character in Metal Gear Solid 4 who repeatedly shits himself.
What?
Yeah, dude.
No.
He's just got diarrhea and he has to shit himself all the time.
No.
And there's like a major cutscene where you get caught because he has to shit himself.
Oh my god.
Yeah, dude, they're goofy ass games. They're also like the stories are often deadly serious.
Right.
But they're wrapped in typically Japanese goofy bullshit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you go look at like top 10 videos on YouTube that are like something like top 10 weirdest moments in gaming or top 5 like ways around the plot or you know, there's so many instances that I've encountered where things from the Metal Gear Solid franchise have been included in those type of lists of like, and usually sure. At the number 1 or number 2 slot. I mean, one that I always see come up, and this is spoilers by the way, major spoilers, but something I already know. I think it's in 3.
Okay.
There's a boss in that game that you have the option of
yes.
Waiting.
Yes.
And he'll die of old age.
Yes.
Right?
That's the depth of detail that I'm talking about. That kind of bullshit.
Yeah. Like there's
End.
That's his name, right? The End. And he's like a old man who's a sniper.
Yes.
And there's that moment where I think there's multiple ways. Like you can either at one point catch him off guard and snipe him before the boss fight even occurs. Like just headshot him.
Or yeah, you there's a scene on a dock where he's far away, and as you approach the dock, a cutscene starts.
Right.
If you shoot him when he's leaving after the cutscene, you never fight him.
Right. That's great. I love stuff like that.
Yeah. Metal Gear Solid has always been a goofy series. Like the first Metal Gear Solid game infamously had a boss fight with Psycho Mantis, who will read your memory card.
Right, and would like rag on you for the games you're playing.
Yeah, and he'll compliment you for other Konami games that you're playing.
Of course.
Like, oh, I see that you enjoy Castlevania. Like, that's dumb as shit, dude.
Yeah. But who's going to expect that, you know, game?
I mean,
people were freaking out.
And, like, there was another part of that boss fight where, like, it required that you read the back of the box of your CD case to know what to do, which meant, like, switching your controller port over.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember that. That was probably on another list, like top 5 ways gamers were fucked with or something.
Oh, no, I think actually it has like a codec number on it. But anyway, yeah, all kinds of weird shit. And then like Kojima had this dream of developing a game where you only get one shot to play it, and if you lose, the disc self-destructs.
Fucking A, of course. He would think. Yeah. I bet you, what's that new one that he's developing with Norman Reedus?
Death Stranding.
Dude, Death Stranding is going to be like that. It's going to be disc only. Like, it's going to blow up your console if you fail.
Dude, you have one shot. You're releasing it on PC. Okay. So if you're doing that on PC, all you got to do is encrypt their game files when they fail. And they can't do anything about it. That's how you do your self-destructing game design. All right? A little tip for you.
That guy's such a genius. You know? He's just he has that... he's a true artist, you know, in a world full of just... Like being a true artist in this type of industry, the gaming industry, is like, I imagine, a pretty difficult task, and he obviously has like a very clear vision. I think Konami was like kind of getting sick of his shit or something.
Yeah, there's a narrative that Leigh Alexander wrote an article about as a narrative through line in Metal Gear Solid 5 about how many game mechanics in Metal Gear Solid 5 are you can draw direct parallels between them and Kojima's experience managing the studio at Konami, wherein he feels like a man unwanted by his superiors, and so he's got like staff management issues and base management issues. There's never enough space for everybody, and he's trying to keep everybody happy and healthy, and it's not working out because Konami had like a really like awful work environment.
Yeah, tumultuous, yeah. Toxic.
There's more to say. I don't have enough knowledge about that subject.
It could be summed up, that whole thing, really. I mean, we don't need to go into it, but it could be summed up with just Guillermo del Toro's tweet, where he just said, "Fuck Konami." I think it was hashtag fuck Konami. That was the greatest fucking Del Toro moment ever. And we saw that dude in real life. We saw him speak on his movies.
Yeah, he'll say whatever's on his mind, man. That's for sure.
And when I saw him say fuck Konami, I was like, I love this man.
I love you, man.
He's down with Kojima. They're gonna team up maybe in the future. They did kind of, PT was kind of like their team up, but
you know, that game has been physically removed from databases.
Yeah, sadly.
Anyway, yeah, Metal Gear Solid 5, dude. That's a that is a good game. And you asked if it was a departure, and no, it's not a departure in its goofiness. Like, that's intrinsic to the Metal Gear Solid experience, but in literally every other way, it is a drastic departure. The gameplay is completely different. The cinematic approach to the game is also very different. At least Solid Snake's voice has changed.
It's Kiefer Sutherland, right?
Yes.
It was Dave Hader before.
I said Solid Snake. That character is Big Boss.
Oh, so you're playing as Big Boss in Metal Gear 5?
Yeah.
Okay. That's not Solid Snake.
No, they're different people.
They just are like look the same.
Well, Solid Snake is a clone of Big Boss.
Fucking dude, I can't get into this right now. You gotta cut me some slack.
Sorry.
I'm just kidding. No, it's deep. It goes deep.
Yeah. So the cinematic approach to the game is different. The fact that it hinges on a completely unheard of game kind of loops back around to Metal Gear Solid, in that plot hinged on a previously unheard of game for most mm-hmm. people. It's a huge departure for sure. And most importantly, you can play it like a shooter if you want to in most scenarios, which is totally, totally removed from the Metal Gear Solid experience.
Yeah.
Prior to this game.
Yeah, I mean, that game allows you to do some really cool stuff, too. Like, throwing your empty magazines at the enemies is really cool. I love that that little mechanic.
You can do that. You can fault in any living creature. You can fault in most objects. You
could do a box slide down a hill.
You can do a box slide down a hill. You can transition from standing to a, like, prone position in, like, a cool dive.
Mm-hmm.
You can dive into a wall and bonk your head.
Ouch.
If you want to, it's goofy.
Get little birdies flying around. Little metal birdies.
Yeah, man. It's such a fucking good game, dude.
Well, you know, I think that Metal Gear stuff in general, maybe we would revisit after I think I need to play some more. And I want to revisit in the future. Because there's so much stuff about it I like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get caught up so much on just the enemies' names in the first game. You got Decoy Octopus, you got Psycho Mantis, mm-hmm. you got Sniper Wolf, mm-hmm. and you got, what's the last one? Vulcan Raven. Mm-hmm. And they're fucking badass, dude. They're like anime enemies, straight up. They're like something you'd read in fighting Naruto or something. Maybe not that, because Naruto's ninja shit, but... seriously, it's great. I love that stuff. I love it.
Watch all the cutscenes.
Is there a 5-hour long YouTube video of them?
More like 15
hours.
Yeah,
I guess that makes sense. All right, I'm going to go do that tonight. I'll talk to you in the morning.
Okay.